At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker for the evening, Steve C. from the Rock Creek area.
Steve, I'm at it.
It's an honor to be up here speaking tonight. The topic is We Found Freedom. I can only share my experience, strength, and hope with that. I don't know how you found it, but I can tell you where I come from. My story, goes way back. I was in my first treatment center in 1976. They had me wearing diapers. Before that, as a kid, I was looking for freedom way before I ever got high. I remember the first time I got high, I found freedom, and it didn't work, but I found it, and I liked it. By 12, 13 years old, I was already on it, and time I was 13, 14, I was smoking PCP just about on a daily basis. This is back in the early 70s, about 1970, 71. 12 years old, I got my first beat for stealing a car. I'm a thief and an addict. I always like to keep that in mind because, I got arrested again when I was 42 for stealing a car. So, that's just what happens. But anyway, I went through high school and, dealing pot and PCP and all that, and trying to fit in with people. I always felt like I didn't fit in. I was in motocross racing as a kid also, and that was like an addiction for me. And like I said, by the time I was 18, I got arrested for distribution, manufacturing, and all kinds of crazy shit, PCP. And I'd already had a heroin habit. I've been shooting cocaine since I was 16. And I was one of those addicts, I couldn't stop. It was all gone, even at that young age. I couldn't walk away from it. And so there I was in my first treatment center with this, had all kinds of charges, jail time and all that, and they, told me to go to jail, go here, and I was in a program called Crossroads, and I walked in there, and I see people wearing signs, and they're talking about 18 months, they went out and had their social drink, it wasn't a 12-step program. It's crazy, and I remember I was there about 3 months, and I remember that day I left and went back to jail. There was a blizzard going on. It was snowing about as hard as it could get. It was like this winter. And there I walk out with this plastic bag, 18 years old, knew I was going back to jail, but I couldn't take another minute of that shit. And I went back and did my time. Did like another year. And I got out and, found my freedom there, getting out, and swore I'd never, use again. And on the way home, I hitchhiked home from jail. My parents took me back in, and got high on the way home. But next 4 or 5 years, I was in and out of treatment. I went to another treatment center in 1980. They told me I had a hepatitis C, or they called it alcoholic hepatitis back then. And they didn't know what it was, but my blood was not right from shooting dope. And I chased my disease all over this country, trying to find my freedom. I went down to Florida to get away from the PCP, and I went down there, and everybody was shooting PCP down there. They weren't smoking it. And I'm like, oh, fuck, and I was, so I went to New Mexico and thought I'd become a cowboy, and I learned how to drink like a cowboy, landed up in L.A., then San Francisco, and then back to D.C., and eventually I went to that first treatment center, and I went to my first meeting. I was so excited going to treatment. I was finally going to learn how I could use successfully, you know, and you know, like be like a normal person. You know, I wouldn't get locked up anymore. You know, I didn't have a clue. And they took me to these meetings, and they weren't NA meetings, but and you know, I stuck around. I went into an Oxford house, and I was trying. I had a sincere desire back then, but I wasn't ready. And I was using in the Oxford house. The president of the house was copping for me. It was, you know, it was in Northwest Washington, you know, and I was real familiar with going down there, you know, buying a lot and all that, and heroin in a young age. And so, and I was, you know, that was probably 1981, 1980. It was, and they kicked me out, you know, rightfully. And I came back in 1983, homeless, you know, my family, you know, I'd worn all that out, and I was living in a $100 car, you know, whatever, a cheap, you know, hoopty, you know, and, you know, I've been doing drywall work for years by then, and, you know, I was either working on the job or hustling at night, whatever, and, you know, I wasn't real slick back then, you know, I didn't know how to work the streets and all that shit. I was just a working guy that got his check and spent all the money, and then, you know, maybe shoplifted, whatever I had to do or to get by. But anyway, I went into this treatment center again, the same one I went into in 1980, a place called Seneca House, trying to find that freedom, you know, I knew I was headed in the wrong direction. I'd already, you know, I'd OD'd and all that. I remember one time woke up and they said I'd been dead for 8 minutes. Shooting cocaine, you know. I don't know if I believe that or what, but I know I woke up and I was laying on the floor. I knew that, you know, I had no chance of living a successful life the way I was living, and I also realized that I had no idea how to stop. So I went in there in 1983, October 1st, and I stayed clean for quite a while. They sent me up to another treatment center up north. I got out, I came back, moved in with some people that I had known from the center I was in at the same time in 1980. Some people that had some clean time. And, you know, things went well. I mean, I was living the life. I stayed clean. I got married with a couple years clean. No, I guess I had about 5 years clean. I got way involved in NA. NA was just starting out in D.C. then. You know, I remember a lot of the early meetings. You know, back then, people went to both programs. You know, I can tell you stories about a lot of these meetings, how they started. You know, I can remember, like, the Glad to Be Alive meeting on Tuesday night was started. The STEP meeting was started because the guy chairing the regular meeting was using it. We all knew it, and we couldn't get him to step down. So we started the STEP meeting. That meeting's still going today. I remember the meeting at Talking Heads was started so we could all meet up before we went down to the other fellowship meeting at 8:30. And that meeting started at 6:30. And that meeting's still going on. The guy that took my bed in the Oxford House in Jennifer Street, I mean, he's the one that started the meeting at Jennifer Street in 1983. And that was, you know, that was a big D.C. Rock Creek meeting back then. He died later on using. He had like 25 years and relapsed. But anyway, I did real well. I got married, had two kids, started a business, bought a house. You know, next thing I know, I bought another house out of Annapolis, living on the water. You know, I bought a condo at the beach. Had the yacht, you know, right up here, 28th Street, and I had a boat parked behind there, you know, a deep sea fishing boat. I was doing good. I had a pretty good sized business going, and, you know, I was involved with my brother, his business partner, and that wasn't too bright, but but anyway, with 4 or 5, maybe 6 years, that's when I moved to Annapolis. I kind of fell out, quit going to meetings, you know, go to once a week, then it was once a month, then it was once a year. And, you know, with 8.5 years, you know, I was I was, you know, next thing I know, I was, you know, carrying around like hundreds of pounds of marijuana from my brother and trying to hide shit from my wife. You know, like I had like, had that boat habit, you know, I had to, you know, keep buying shit for my boat, so I didn't want her to know I had all this money and stuff. So, you know, I had to buy the nice radar or whatever, you know, and next thing you know, I'm, you know, I lit one up and I remember that day very well. I was driving down 210 and I lit it up and I was thinking, well, as long as I don't smoke any PCP or shoot any dope, I'll be all right. And, you know, and next thing I know, I said, well, I've never tried any of this crack. You know, they didn't have that back then. So, you know, that's lightweight shit, you know. We used to shoot this, you know, but, you know. So either I was smoking a lightweight crack, you know, half the time it was soap, you know, at first. And I was stupid, man. I mean, I hadn't been on the streets in years, and I'm down here in Northeast in the hood, you know, a Hanover place and shit, you know, and I was naive as shit when I first went down there. I mean, I was, you know, I had plenty of money, and man, I was like, you know, there he is, you know, get him, you know. He got money, you know. And, you know, I wised up quick, trust me. But I got to tell you, within 6 months, I was living under a fucking bridge, you know, with a sign begging for change. You know, I had a sign that said homeless with two kids. You know, but I hadn't seen him in, you know, 6 months, but if that didn't work, I flipped the sign over and said, would you please pass the gray coupon? You know, and you have to be old to get that one, but and, you know, I was a mess for a long time, from 1991. You know, I would, you know, first, like I said, when I went down there, I was, you know, very, you know, but, you know, you learn quick, and, you know, I lived the streets hard for a long time. You know, I was homeless. You know, I landed up in a lot of crazy places, landed up doing a lot of time between that 9-10 years. Landed up in L.A. on the streets out there, then living down on Broadway, and down up and down 7th Street, just wandering around, you know, trying to get a dollar hit, you know, and I was in a lot of different programs. I was in the Delancey Street Foundation, which was the hardest thing I'd ever been around. I mean, it was crazy. I left there and, you know, I was in left there and then tried to go back, and that's how I landed up in Los Angeles. But, you know, I go out to L.A. a couple times a year now, and every time I go out there, I go right down there. They call it the Barrio, and, you know, I remember, you know, it was rough out there. You know, your feet, you know, you just keep walking. You don't have nothing else to do or nowhere to go, and you know, until you just fall out, you know. That's the way I lived, you know. When I was back in D.C., I went through some crazy shit. I hurt people. You know, I did a lot of crazy shit that I'm not proud of. And I'm real lucky to make it out alive. You know, I was one of them guys, like, you see me down at Greyhound trying to sell a fake gold chain and shit, you know, or selling batteries out in front of Union Station, you know, that I just stole, you know, just trying to get $10, man. 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, it's 10 degrees outside. I'm out there with some fucking sign in the middle of New York Avenue, you know. And I ran around with, you know, some guys that, I call them professional panhandlers. They were, one guy was all burnt up. He had one arm. And if you're from D.C., you probably know him, or you've seen him, but he's dead now. But another guy with no arms, you know. And I'd always, you know, I didn't like living that way. I'd always go back, like, to treatment. I was in one detox 23 times. I was like that guy on Mayberry that just walked into jail. You know, Otis. I had it like that at this rehab fair in Chantilly, you know. I knew the girl that ran the joint. Like, I just get right in, you know, and they're going to make sure I took off all my clothes before I walked in and, you know, sprayed me down and shit. But, you know, it was, you know, it's pathetic. But I was always trying to get that freedom. I did not like the way I was living, you know, not one bit. I just couldn't stop, you know. I remember, you know, I'd get 2, 3, 4, 5 months clean. One time I got 6. And I'm driving down, you know, with some money in my pocket, living in an ostrich house somewhere. I got kicked out of all the ostrich houses. But driving down in some cheap car, you know, thinking I'm going to go down. Because I, you know, run around with them girls down there and stuff. And, you know, driving them around thinking, you know, I'm going to make money and all this shit. And, you know, smoke crack. And thinking I didn't have a choice. You know, puking up and down the side of the car driving down there. Hadn't been high in months. You know, just knowing I was going down and ruin my life one more time. You know, I didn't have a choice. I thought, you know, I was a slave. You know, I didn't have any freedom. I was brainwashed by, you know, my thinking was really, it wasn't the drugs, it was my thinking. I was clean. I was convinced that I had to live that way. And finally, I had 6 months clean in the year 2000. I remember I got clean right after K2, whatever the why, yeah. And I remember I was down in Northeast and guns were going off everywhere and shit. Right after that, I went into treatment and but anyway, I got clean that year and I had 6 months. I went out, relapsed. And 2 days later, again, I was facing 10 years again. You know, stole a car. And I've been driving for a while, but they pressed charges, you know. And so there I am back in D.C. jail, you know, Northwest 3, back, same old shit. You know, I used to love to get locked up at Central Cell Block just to get some free food. I knew I'd get out the next day just for some light shit, but... you know, I knew I was, you know, I thought I was going to do some serious time. They told me I had lung cancer. I didn't have lung cancer, but they told me that. It scared the shit out of me. Yeah. I had some choice stuck in my lung or something. They took an x-ray and had me mixed up with the wrong guy or something. I said, oh, fuck. I got lung cancer. I'm 42 years old, you know. And, getting ready to do 10 years and I got lung cancer, man. Fuck. But anyway, I got out of jail like 3 or 4 months later. People dropped the charges. I was guilty as shit, you know. And I got out of jail. It was like January, maybe December 20. I can't remember. And I had nowhere to go. Didn't have a jacket. Cold as shit outside. It was midnight. You know, they let you out at like 12:05, you know, and I called my old sponsor. He told me, well, I called him when I was in jail. He's the only one taking my calls. I hadn't, you know, I wasn't one of them guys that had the canteen and all that shit, you know. It was rough for me in there. So there I am, you know, and he told me to go over to this guy's house. His name was Yui. And I knew Yui. I knew his dad. I've known him for a long time, but I didn't know him like that. And he called Yui and he said, Steve's going to walk down to your house. You know, and it was a good walk from the jail, but probably about 5-10 miles. But I got there. And he had like probably 30-something years clean at that time. Maybe 28 or so. I don't know, a lot. And his wife, she didn't like me one bit, man. Now I am sleeping on his couch, and I'm like, what the fuck is he doing, man? You know, and he's like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, this guy's never going to get clean, blah blah blah. And this is how I found my freedom, watching these guys. You know, this guy had 30 years. My old sponsor, Kevin A. He had a lot, 20 some years clean. I've been clean that February. My old sponsor, Kevin, he fell over dead playing tennis. And that really shook me up. And he wouldn't sponsor me anymore, and Yui didn't want to sponsor me. And I had a big resentment, so I took on Kevin's sponsor. He he said, "I'll sponsor you." And he was dying of cancer. You know, his name was Bill T. And a lot of people knew him back then. But anyway, I watched this guy fighting for his life, trying to help other people. You know, all he talked about was the fifth tradition. You know, he lived by it right down to the last minute. You know, and I'm like, man, what an example. And I remember Kevin A. taught me about, this is where I found my real freedom, is honesty, especially in that first step. You see, when I was in the first step, I never realized I could recite the steps, all that shit. I've been doing this shit my whole life, you know. And I the first step for me was honesty. In one word, that was a spiritual principle. I never got that, you know. I never realized that. I thought it was my life's unmanageable, you know, blah blah blah. But power over my addiction, no shit. You know, but the real deal was my thinking's fucked up, and all I had to do was get honest. When I was driving down there puking, I didn't have to keep going. All I had to do was fucking turn around. You know, that's the real deal. You know, the honest, you know what, I had to learn the difference between right or wrong. I didn't know that. And I had to learn how to listen to other people. And these guys inspired me. 11th tradition, program of attraction. It wasn't the nice stuff they own and all that. It was what they did. You know, they bent over backwards trying to help other addicts. You know, that was their primary purpose. 12th tradition, 12th step. Primary purpose, help another addict. You know, and practice these principles in all our affairs. And they were doing that shit. And I, you know, it inspired me. And I got involved, you know, service. 6 months clean, I became a, they called it an ASR back then, an area service rep. And I met a lot of really great people, and I was really, really backwards. I've never used a computer or anything. I was very naive about a whole lot of shit in life. Didn't realize it, but I had to learn a whole bunch of stuff. And doing service taught me how to live, taught me how to deal with other people. Next thing I know, I was ASR. The next thing I know, I'm the regional service rep assistant or vice chair. I did that for 2 years. And after that, became chairman, regional chair for CPRC. It's been about 10 years since then. But did that for 2 years. And, you know, I remember going to my first regional meeting, and I'm thinking, man, these guys are, what the fuck are they doing? You know, and I thought they were great. And next thing I know, I'm in there, just by giving back, I'm in there helping out. They had me signing the NA checks, man, with like an 18-page jacket. And me and another dude, his shit was worse than mine. You know, we're signing the checks and all that. And, man, it saved my life. That's what, you know, doing all that work, I found my freedom. It hasn't all been, I've been clean since November 10th, 2000. Hasn't all been a bed of roses. You know, I got married, got divorced, you know. But, you know, and then the last 3 years have been a living hell. You know, I had a knee replacement the last 2 years. It'll be 2 years in September, I had my knee replaced. As I failed to mention, I fell and broke my leg. And I was living in an Oscar house, and I used, and they kicked me out, and I had a cast from my, all the way up and down my leg, from my foot all the way up. And there I am walking around homeless from, you know, a long time with a cast on my leg. It never healed right. So, you know, I finally had a knee replacement this year. I've had health insurance for shit 12, 13 years now. I paid for it myself. You know, I've had my own business. I learned how to build guitar amps since I've been back. You know, a lot of this shit, the stuff that's happened to me. I mean, when I first got here, I thought maybe I'd live in Oxford House the rest of my life and, like, you know, work, you know, some regular job. And, things are good now. I got a great life. And this last year has been really tough on me. I started a treatment called Invective a year ago yesterday, matter of fact, along with some interferon. and ribavirin. And I've done the interferon and ribavirin before. I did it when I was chairing the region. It was bad. But this Invectiv shit had me out of my mind, man. I'm going to tell you, I'd be sitting here right now. Next thing you know, I might be walking around the ceiling. I was fucked up, man. It was the hardest 3 months I can remember. I mean, my whole body was scratched up. I lay in bed. You know, it was tough. But I've been clear from hepatitis C for 11 months now. You know, the real test isn't for another 3 months is when the deciding test comes in play. But it looks good, and it's all been worth it. I'm in a wonderful relationship today. You know, my home group is Beachcombers. I go there every Saturday night. You know, life's good. I don't know how free I am every given minute. You know, my life's busy. I've been up since 4 a.m. I was working today. You know, I got a bunch of guys working. It was payday. I had to pay everybody and get money and all that shit. You know. You know, I have freedom from active addiction, and but at the same time, life's not always, you know, it's good. I'm clean, but it's hard sometimes. And I choose to live that way. You know, I could make it a lot easier if I wanted to. I probably wouldn't have it any other way. But anyway, that's all I got. I'm just glad to be clean.